Please pray with me. God, in these next few moments, I pray that there would be less and less of me and more of you. For you, O God, are our rock and redeemer. Amen. I'm going to share with you a secret this morning. If you've never been to the offices of the staff or to the memorial room that is by the office of the staff, there are beautiful views there and great windows. Thank you very much. And that's not the secret. But we can see out into our neighborhood. Lots of people pass by and lots can happen. And so here's the secret. We have a pair of binoculars in the office. Thank you, Pastor Curtis. And he passed those on to Tom, and Tom passed those on to Pastor Joe. And so these binoculars help us to see a bit further beyond than what our actual eyes can see, except Pastor Joe told me this morning that they don't work too well. Many times it can be what's happening at the nearby gas station, and the binoculars help us to see what's happening in the neighborhood a bit more clearly and to walk alongside people a bit better, not to be nosy. I've always wanted to be a good neighbor, but I haven't always known how, and I'm still learning. Sometimes I've been fearful, sometimes shy, sometimes too busy, sometimes thinking it's not the right time, sometimes frozen in place behind the binoculars, behind the window, behind the door, safe in my own home or in the building and where I work, not taking the step beyond the walls. God's been working with me in my prayer life on this at the clergy spouse retreat this year. I heard an author speak, as did Pastor Joe's wife, Jennifer, named Shannon Martin. She wrote a book called The Ministry of Ordinary Places, Waking Up to God's Goodness Around You. And I'll be using some of that in my words to you today. She lived in a dream home after having worked in D.C. with her husband for senators and had lived a pretty comfortable life. However, Shannon and her husband felt something was missing. They were called to be good neighbors, and their farmhouse, their dream house, was not where they were called to live. So they moved to the other side of the tracks in Goshen, Indiana, and they've been learning what it means to be a neighbor ever since. There are definitely many, many more details to the story, but I wanted to share with you what I've learned from listening to Shannon speak, from getting to have a conversation with her over dinner, maybe Jennifer's favorite part of that weekend, she's a big fan too, and reading her books. While I feel convicted that most of us here in this church don't live in this neighborhood, and we leave this place to go on about our lives each night, or sometimes even for an entire week before we return. And while I hope that someday some of us will live closer to the church, I've learned also that it's not really a problem. It's just that we have to work a little harder at being neighborly as a church and get a bit more creative. We are called to love. So often we get busy trying to make the scale of love, Jesus's love, match its significance. If love is as big a deal as Jesus said it is, then we need to be sure we don't mess it up, right? We endure untold sermons and Bible studies on what it might look like to truly love our neighbor. We read books and blogs and listen to podcasts, discussing them with our friends. But for some of us, we never seem to take the actual step of getting outside of our churches and homes to do something about it. How exactly are we supposed to give legs to this inborn desire to become a community of compassion, kinship, and love? Where do we start? While sharing the hope of Christ is certainly not wrong, there's a better way to connect with people who are overlooked. It involves not just a loving gesture, but actual love that cannot be put on, taken off, or packed up at the end of the day. We will have to choose to widen our circles and allow our lives to become tangled up with those around us. We are asked to view our immediate world with fresh eyes, to see how we might plant love with intention. We are asked to pay attention to wherever God has placed us. It can be as simple as looking out the window and noticing, even if it's with binoculars. So what have I learned about hospitality and about being a neighbor? First, who is our neighbor? The American concept of neighbors is that our neighbors are the ones who live next door, right? The ones who we wave at from time to time, nice people who keep a comfortable distance, whose names we might or might not know. Many times I don't know them. I'm honest with you about that. I'm horrible with names. But does this American concept match God's idea? God invites us to something deeper, and we are called to join God in loving each other. Our neighbor is not someone who looks like us. It's not someone who we're most comfortable with. Our neighbor does not need to be saved, for that is what Jesus came to do. We have experiences and headlines that talk about poverty, addiction, racism, chronic loneliness, the list goes on and on. These aren't just statistics or stories, these are people. These point to the actual lives of people who are dynamic and complex, people who we know and love, people who walk the same sidewalks as us, who drive on the same streets as us, who look at the same sky as us. They are in pursuit of the same things that we are. To exist with meaning, to belong, to wring every drop of hope from the world that we're in. That is what being a neighbor is. Second, what is hospitality? In a straightforward sense, it means you are invited. There is room for you here next to me. I receive you with gladness and offer my truest self. Here we draw nearer to each other, seeking refuge from the crush of life. Here we are safe, warm, free. There is messiness and unpredictability, but it is worth taking some risks and making some mistakes to cultivate a consistent rhythm of welcome and belonging in our homes and in our church. When we are succeeding at being hospitable, the lines of hospitality and discipleship begin to blur and they begin to become one. Jesus was intimately attuned to his own physical surroundings. Jesus had a call in his life to greater awareness. Taste and see. Listen. Stay awake. And like he told his followers when he sent them out into the world, go with your eyes wide open. Jesus' physical senses. Let's remember that talking is not one of those five senses. Jesus' senses drew him to his neighbors, forming the common ground of people cultivating a rhythm of togetherness, the essence of shalom. Discipleship hinges on enduring proximity, worshiping God, serving our community in joy, sticking around for the long haul, and walking together toward a better way. We need to look as individuals and as a church at what we already do in our lives. What do we do that involves a no-hype faithfulness? How do we already love people who can't exactly pay us back? How do we already show up and stick around? How do we already trust that our long roots will yield fruit? One of the ways in which we've been continuing to work on hospitality as a church is by making our building ready for future generations and by making it ready for now. Last week, we rolled out our plans for new flooring, which you can see in the insert in your bulletin, and windows, parking lot, flooring, welcome center, places for making connections in the pathways of where people congregate and converse are all parts of hospitality. We have questions we continue to ask that deal with the physical aspects of our church, but hospitality goes beyond the floors, the tables, and the donuts. These are questions that a hospitality team will ask and reflect on in the new year, including those questions I mentioned about what do we already do as a church. We must never forget to celebrate our rich history and honor our present reality. These other questions that we can ask include, how is our welcoming attitude? How do we make our church more accessible to our guests and members? How do we welcome guests to our church effectively? What can we do to make the sad and beautiful world a little softer for everyone? What can we do to provide the opportunity for others to thrive in a new way? For people to be seen, heard, and valued? Too often we tend toward rolling out a program when perhaps what every person needs most is a welcome mat, a place where they are known and welcomed and loved without expectation, no strings attached. Shannon shared a story about a woman who was surviving homelessness with her family and navigating this and doing their best to receive help offered by well-meaning Christians. But the well-meaning help was rarely what they wanted or what they needed. The woman said in her particular situation that she didn't need someone else's old clothes. She didn't need people's pity or for them to tell her family to trust in God. What she needed was a smiling face, to know they weren't alone, to listen, and to root for them. Rather than clinging to these words of them and us, let's keep being broken together. Slow to assume that certain people automatically need Jesus. Maybe they already have him. Maybe they just need a true friend. Maybe we find ourselves compelled toward them because we need to be discipled by them. Love asks us to be ready to enter into their lives fully, not content with referring them to agencies for assistance, but eager to take on their limp as we walk closely with them through trouble. What if we didn't invite someone to church until we'd already invited them over for a meal? You know, Matthew 25, I was hungry and you fed me, thirsty and you gave me a drink, a stranger and you invited me into your home, in prison and you visited me. Real love takes time. Its growth is slow and sustained. If we want to look and love at the world around us, we have to stop as we pass each other by to get a good, honest look, to call it beautiful, and to stick around. We will have to continue to spend time, quiet time daily with the Lord, but it might not be so quiet. This quiet might actually be a ruckus, a sacred inconvenience, a stunning catastrophe not to be missed. Jesus brought faith and healing through the overlooked, unspectacular elements of everyday life. We will also have to be open to receiving what others have to offer, because everyone has something to offer. Without receiving, we miss the richness of giving. We will have to make ourselves available. The way we spend our love is the way we spend our lives. As it says in our passage from Romans today, each of us must please our neighbor for the good purpose of building up the neighbor. When we open our lives to those from whom we've used to keep a safe distance, it changes everything. Our well-being becomes mashed up with that of our neighbors, and this shifts how we think about our homes, our time, our money, and our ideas about everything from personal responsibility to success. Loving people at close range unveils all we haven't known. Our gifts are tools for the kingdom, not to be hoarded or used to seclude ourselves, but they are basic loaves of bread meant to be shared. We each have different ways that we can be hospitable. It doesn't always have to involve planning, timelines, multiple courses, and centerpieces, though it can, and I'm really looking forward to the Thanksgiving meal we'll all hopefully share together next Sunday. We have to figure out how we feel about hospitality to be able to step into it with more confidence. Maybe we are an introvert and we've allowed ourselves to believe this lets us off the hook of inviting others into our homes and lives. Maybe we dislike small talk or think our homes aren't big enough. Maybe we fear judgment. We don't think we're good enough at cooking, or we have to juggle small kids and all that goes along with that, naps, bedtimes, chaos, special needs, mommy, mommy, mommy over again. Maybe we are single and we aren't quite sure where we fit into this conversation of hospitality, but we still long to be included in the fiasco of family. Maybe we have social anxiety that is crippling. Maybe we have to let go of control. Maybe being vulnerable isn't a muscle we're used to flexing. We are afraid to be rejected for who we actually are, so we either bail out entirely or crank it into entertainment overdrive, trying to wow our way around authenticity. But how about a no-pressure approach? It's not about the house. It's about the humans. Before we can learn from each other and grow into a clearer picture of God's good kingdom, we will have to fall in love with listening, listening without an agenda. As we continue to study our corner of the world, we find others near us wanting the same things we do. We can stop searching for the perfect fit. Instead, we can look around for the people who are already near us and take them as they take us, as is. We are called to be long-haul neighbors committed to authenticity and willing to take some risks. Our vocation is to invest deeply in the lives of those around us, devoted to one another, physically close to each other. As we breathe the same air and walk the same blocks, we get to love and be deeply loved right where we're planted by whomever happens to be near. We will encounter brokenness we cannot fix or solve or understand, and will feel as small and uncertain as we have ever felt. The details of being among people as Jesus was will look quiet and ordinary. They will exhaust and exhilarate us. And warning, as we start to belong to each other, all bets are off. Pastor Gabriel Salguero, president of the National Latino Evangelical Coalition, said, "To love your neighbor is never safe, but it is always good." Just as we keep up this building, preparing it to be better for the future, and keeping up with the multitude of repairs a building requires, just ask the trustees about that. Let's keep our ears tuned to the groanings in the community around us. Let's get better at loving people for every good and puzzling thing they are. Let's build up, lean in, stick around, dig deep, and be fully present. Let's offer the hope of Christ to the world around us, right where we are. For when we stand together, we are closer to hope, God's love, God's hospitality. Amen.